Tonight I want to address a big question which I run into again and again in pastoral conversations. It's not usually the surface question, but underneath it seems to be one that causes some anxiety, confusion or uncertainty for a great many people, including a number of you. And tonight's reading addresses the question in a way which, without wider context or explanation, may actually make the concerns worse, but which I think, if we explore properly, can be very enlightening and helpful. Here's the problem. The biblical law contained in the Hebrew parts of the Bible that were already in existence at the time of Jesus contain large lists of laws that cover everything, from things that we would all agree with, like don't murder and don't steal, through things that we might be more divided over, like rules about who you can and can't sleep with and whether you can charge interest on loans, all the way to rules that almost nobody seems to regard as even vaguely relevant to anyone today, such as prescribed hairstyles, which I obviously don't comply with, and not putting yogurt on your souvlaki. Most Christians are agreed that the way the biblical law is to be understood and applied has changed as a result of the salvation achieved by Jesus and the teachings that he gave. But ever since his time, we have had endless disputes about how to determine which laws should still be regarded as law for us. And for many, many people, this is a very real concern, because if the law spells out what God expects and requires of us, then knowing how we are to understand and obey it is presumably pretty important in enabling us to live lives that are acceptable to God. So the big problem is that not only are we not clear about it, but the most explicit teaching recorded as coming directly from Jesus on the subject was what we heard tonight. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish, but to fulfill. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth pass away, not one letter, not one stroke of a letter will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. So, big dilemma. Jesus explicitly says that we will not even get into the kingdom of heaven unless our righteousness outshines even that of the acknowledged leading experts in the study and rigorous application of the law, and that not one jot or tittle of the law is to be discarded, and yet we clearly don't follow even half of what those experts followed rigorously, and we have little or no idea of how to even work out which bits we should be following. And not only does our own entry into the kingdom of heaven apparently depend on it, but according to the first part of the passage where Jesus talks about us being the salt of the earth and a light on a hill, we're supposed to be a shining light to everyone else on how to live it out as well. So, of course, my job is to stand up here and solve the puzzle for you in 15 minutes. Or not. I'll do my best. The first thing that I suggest that we know about Jesus and the biblical law is that his attitude to the biblical law was extremely controversial in his own day, and indeed it formed the basis of one of the charges on which he was eventually executed. And you can be perfectly sure that there was nothing controversial in those days about the idea that not one jot or tittle was to pass from the law. So if this was the sum total of his teaching and his example, such a charge would never have been brought, let alone sustained. So if we are to be true to Jesus, we will not end our discussion with a simplistic conclusion that every word of the Bible is equally important and equally and easily applicable to us today. It's interesting and informative to note that Jesus began by saying, "I have not come to abolish the law or the prophets," when elsewhere it would have to be said that he appears to clearly set the law and the prophets in opposition to each other, or at least aspects of them. Jesus was very fond of quoting the prophets as saying, "I desire mercy, not sacrifice," which of course was a prophetic critique of a major chunk of the law. The law clearly indicated that God not only wants sacrifices, but he wants them to comply with a very detailed set of regulations. But Jesus backs up several of the prophets who say that God despises sacrifices and wants us to be merciful instead. The first reading that we heard tonight from the prophet Isaiah, while not being one from which that particular quote came, is a good example of the same message, because the law also laid down rules about fasting, and tonight we heard the prophet saying that God despises fasting practices even when they perfectly comply with the rules if they're not expressions of merciful lives, which is exactly the sort of thing that Jesus frequently quotes or says himself. The second thing that is absolutely essential to recognise if we're going to make any sense of what Jesus is on about here is the context of this passage at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount. Because if you separate it from that context, then you separate it from the following list of teachings in which Jesus repeatedly says, "You have heard it said in the law, da-da-da, but I say to you, da-da-da." So, in its context, there's no possible way that you can take this passage as Jesus simply asserting that the law, as previously given and traditionally understood, continues to be the bottom line for us from here on. Even before looking at the specific context of the teachings, it is clear that Jesus is claiming the authority to interpret or reinterpret these laws. And because he is also asserting that nothing is being discarded, he is claiming the authority to be able to reveal to us the true meaning of the law, or what it was always, or what it always meant in terms of who God is and what God really wants. Now, of course, if you've read the Sermon on the Mount, you will probably realise that the reinterpretation given by Jesus does not make it any more likely that we will be able to easily fulfil the letter of the law. Jesus says, for example, "It's not enough to just not murder. I say to you that you should not even get angry with anyone. And it's not enough to just not commit adultery. You should not even look at another person with lust in your eyes." So, speaking personally, while I have never broken the old Hebrew versions of those laws, it would be a rare week that I did not fall short of the Jesus versions of both of them. And sorry if that disappoints the person who wrote on my annual pastoral review questionnaire that they didn't think sex ever crossed my mind. A simplistic reading of these teachings would conclude that Jesus is still totally committed to religion. A simplistic reading could conclude that Jesus is still totally committed to religion as law keeping, but that he is tightening up the law. But that would be to take these passages out of the wider context of Jesus' teachings and practice. We've already seen how he directly opposes the general thrust of the sacrificial laws, and there are numerous other stories about the religious lawyers being outraged at his apparent disregard of other aspects of the biblical law. And there are laws that Jesus makes even tougher than before, and others that he seems to regard as at least matters of indifference. So all I've probably managed to do so far is rule out a couple of easy answers, but that may not get us a whole lot closer to knowing what Jesus meant by saying that he does not abolish but fulfil every jot and tittle of the law, while at the same time backing the prophetic critique of some parts of the law and reinterpreting other parts in even more challenging ways. I may have also set up the expectation that I'm about to give you a clear answer, but the truth is that all I can give you is a bit of a summary version, because to properly explain and demonstrate the answers requires a book or two, not the last 5 minutes of a sermon. So here goes. I think that the image that Jesus uses as of the light on the hill is instructive, because previously Israel and its scriptures have been described as a light to the nations. So in these images, what is being described is something that helps us find our direction. If you're trying to make your way towards a light on a hill, the light will not tell you all the details about exactly what lies between here and there, but it will enable you to stay more or less on track. And what Jesus seems to be telling us about the Bible, that he refers to as the Law and the Prophets, is that it is more like a light on a hill than a detailed street directory, and that we are still a fair way from reaching the hill. And because we are still so far from reaching the hill, which we could perhaps name the kingdom of heaven, this light is still contending with the darkness. And thus what we have in the Bible tells us as much about what we're leaving behind as it does about where we're headed. So as we see in Jesus' frequent quotings of lines like the one about God desiring mercy, not sacrifice, which are in fact setting one part of the Bible against another, the Bible actually contains a sustained debate between at least two radically different understandings of who God is and what God wants from us. There's an argument going on, and both sides are represented in these pages. But before you throw your hands up in despair, that doesn't mean that we are left totally to our own devices to sort it out and decide which side to take and what to believe. What the light on the hill image tells us is that there is a clear direction emerging from this debate. If we keep following the light becomes clearer and clearer. When you take the whole sweep of the Bible, the overall direction becomes clearer and clearer. And what Jesus seems to be hinting, and we are certainly claiming, is that Jesus himself, his life, teaching, death, and resurrection grace, are the high point of the debate, the definitive revelation of who God is and what God is like and what God asks of us. And if we follow this light on the hill, it will take us all the way from a primitive view of a fearsome God whose uncontainable power could kill us all unless he's placated by blood and we step very carefully only on the stones that the law has determined to be safe, all the way from there to a God whose love knows no bounds and who would rather sacrifice himself to our violence than give up loving us and forgiving us and welcoming us with open arms, and whose desire is that we model ourselves on that same love and mercy. Now, there have been people over the centuries who have seen this vision and concluded that we should therefore simply throw out the parts of the Bible that were written before Jesus, or at least all of those sections that reflect the primitive, bloodthirsty views of God. But not only does Jesus not, urge us not to discard even one jot or tittle, but his constant, sometimes critical engagement with those scriptures shows us how important they are if we are to understand where we are going. We need to be able to see what the light is leading us away from if we are to adequately grasp the startling truth of the grace that we are being led towards. So when Jesus says things like, "You have heard it said, do not murder, but I say to you, do not even get angry or insult anyone," he's not saying, and there is an angry, bloodthirsty God keeping a score of your failings who will burn you in hell unless you comply with this new law. Rather, he's saying something like, if you tried to become all that God desires you to become by turning it all into laws and then complying with the laws, this is how absurdly impossible the laws would become. And there would be no end of them. You would never keep track of all the laws or be able to live up to them. Instead, set your sights on Jesus, the light on the hill, the light of the world, and follow that way, and God will be delighted, and the angels will be singing for joy, and all will be well. But for those who feel too insecure, if there are only lights and no laws, Jesus says, okay, all the intent of the law and the prophets can be summed up in just a couple of laws. Love God with everything that you are, and love others, even your enemies, and treat them as you would wish to be treated yourself. And blurring the distinction between light and law even more, he says, and here's a new law for you, love one another, even your enemies, as I have loved you. Just model yourselves on me and everything will fall into place and not one jot or tittle will be left unfulfilled. For the most part, we here are not a church that puts a great deal of emphasis on biblical law or on the need to be obedient to every jot and tittle of the law or even just the jots and tittles that are currently fashionable among our fellow evangelical Christians. And I know that sometimes that leaves some of you feeling a little bit insecure and unsure about whether you're acceptable to God and or whether you're being led astray by our apparent disregard for various jots and tittles. But I can assure you, and this assurance comes from one who knows that he stands under the weight of lines like the one we heard tonight that says that one who teaches others to break the least of these commandments will be called the least in the kingdom of heaven, and another that says a teacher who causes others to stumble would be better off thrown into the sea with a millstone tied around his neck. Standing under the weight of that, I can assure you that the whole trajectory of the law and the prophets, the biblical law and prophets, is pointing towards Jesus and the revelation of God in Jesus, to Jesus in whom every jot and tittle is fulfilled and whose righteousness is given to you freely and generously. And if you accept his gift and model yourselves on his generous love and mercy, every jot and tittle will be taken care of, and your righteousness, gifted to you by Jesus, will indeed exceed that of even the most dour and diligent of rigorous law keepers. And thanks be to God.